Picture a world where costs are down, profits are up, and customers are clamoring at your door. You're listening to Let's Get Up to Business from Jordan Law. Our interviews with business owners, service providers, and area experts can teach you how to create a world of success and profitability. If you're looking for an attorney to assist in your business formation, employment agreements, or other legal business needs, contact Jordan Law at 407-906-5529. You can also reach us on the web at jordanlawfl.com. Jordan Law, we protect you and your business.
Hello and welcome to Let's Get Up to Business. As you know, I'm Jordan Ostroff, the managing partner of Jordan Law FL, a business law and personal injury firm here in sunny Orlando, Florida. And this is our podcast turn Facebook Live. Joining us today is Lee Steinhauer, who's going to talk to us about the complete guide to Orlando development for the upcoming year or so as we get away from the COVID pandemic and back to hopefully a little bit more sense of normalcy. So before we tap into his brain, I want to pitch our business protection plan. Obviously, as you know, that's something that we put together geared for business owners, especially with all of the uncertainty during COVID, that it allows business owners to subscribe to a monthly service where we have a number of, you know, free opportunities for them to have questions answered, as well as putting together all the sort of different documents that a business needs to grow and stay protected as they develop. So, and with that sort of pun, let's talk about Orlando development. Lee, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no, appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me. I was joking before, the complete guide, that's a lot of pressure, but I think we can give you a pretty good sense of what's going on here in the development world.
There we go. So if we have anybody on this who doesn't happen to know who you are, can you give us a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. So I currently have my own government relations and law firm, the Steinhauer Group. Through that entity, I represent the Greater Orlando Builders Association, and I also represent the Apartment Association of Greater Orlando. So I get single family residential side and the multifamily residential side. I represent both. I have that privilege and honor. So I do have a pretty good sense of what's going on, certainly on the residential side of the market here in Central Florida.
All right. So when we're done with the real picture of our talk, I'm going to ask you if people should be selling their house right now in anticipation of some sort of dip, and we'll hold you to that. This will be saved for all eternity. Everybody can listen to these comments here for the rest of time. No, we won't make it that hard for you. So, you know, it's really interesting. You know, I like where you position yourself. And obviously, I always love talking to other lawyers who aren't really lawyers or aren't just lawyers. And so you put yourself on quite the pulse of economic development. So tell us a little bit more about that, the Greater Orlando Builders Association and the Residential Association, et cetera.
So sure. So the Greater Orlando Builders Association represents home builders, the single family homeownership side of the market. They're the second or third largest home building chapter association here in the state of Florida. Also represent, again, the Apartment Association of Greater Orlando, represent the multifamily rental side of the market. And Apartment Association of Greater London is the largest chapter, multifamily apartment chapter association in the state of Florida. So they're both pretty huge associations, a lot of members, and the majority of the development that's going on the residential side are being done by members of both of those associations. And I can start to get into to some of the market dynamics if you want me to jump in there.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a second. I just, before we go into the current stuff, I want to talk about, so over the last, let's say hypothetically 7 or so months that we've been going through the COVID stuff, you know, how have you seen any change, or how have you seen that change from these organizations working backwards? And then let's talk about that kind of current and forward projection.
Sure. So absolutely. Like any industry, the residential real estate market sector has had to adapt. I think going into COVID, you know, in March and April, I mean, there was enormous uncertainty, as you can imagine. I mean, who's going to want to buy a home, a new home in the middle of a pandemic, right? Not to mention the economic uncertainty, but also just the act of buying a new home, right? The interactions that have to take place, whether it be with your realtor, with the you know, the buyer or the seller, the mortgage broker, et cetera, you know, how is that going to work? And I can tell you that the industry has been just fantastic in terms of innovating and being creative in terms of the home buying experience. They've gone, as you can imagine, online, virtual tours of the homes, the way that they've marketed. I think a lot of it was, They were kind of moving in that direction pre-COVID, and obviously COVID kind of forced them by necessity to fully invest in that side. And it's actually been, I think, working phenomenally well. And the market currently is far stronger than I think anyone anticipated.
Well, especially for our area. I mean, you have so many people investing here from, you know, from up north, from Brazil, from other countries, from all around. You know, and they may not want to hop on a plane to come look at a house, but doing a virtual walkthrough may be what they need to, you know, pull the trigger on something in Orlando or the central area. Let's go that way.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And that's exactly what has been occurring. And I think the big fear was, were people going to be reluctant to invest without being able to physically see the asset that they're investing in? And the answer appears to be yes. And a lot of it's the virtual touring and some of the different creative ways that they've been able to sell these real estate assets.
Yeah, I'll throw myself under the bus a little bit here. So my father-in-law retired from being a mechanical and electrical engineer, and so we would go, when we were looking at homes, you know, 6 or so years ago, my wife goes in and she's like sticking her hands underneath all the countertops to see if it's laminate or a full slab, and I'm just like, this looks pretty, that looks pretty, this looks nice. So I'm that one that would totally buy something off the video, but I don't think my wife would let me. She'd have to go, you know, test everything before we made a, you know, couple $100,000 or more commitment to a house long term.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's certain people still out there of that mindset, without a doubt.
So what are we looking at currently, you know, as we transition from what's been going on for the last 7 months to those future projections? You know, what's kind of the status of everything right now?
So I will say on the single family home ownership side, the market is, like I said before, stronger than I think anyone anticipated, and in ways stronger than it was even pre-COVID. And there's a number of reasons why that is the case, because I think on the surface of it, you would say, how can that be the case with all of the economic uncertainty and everything else going on? Well, there's a few trends that have kind of been, they were pre-COVID and have carried over, but have, in fact, in some cases been accelerated and even enhanced. And a few other trends that have also come to bear that have created kind of a perfect storm, if you will, for a strong housing market in the nation and certainly here in Central Florida. One is you're seeing millennials, who are a huge generation. They were a little late to the home ownership game. Previous generations had moved into home ownership faster than millennials, and a lot of that's student loan debt, some of the financial difficulties in the last couple of decades have kind of delayed that. But you were starting to see them finally kind of migrate from rental into home ownership, and you're seeing that carry over into COVID. And in fact, you're seeing that accelerate. And again, there's a lot of reasons for that. One, a natural progression, but two, the work from home, you know, remote working phenomenon that we're seeing is not just a short, it appears not just to be a short-term thing, but in fact is becoming a long-term thing in terms of the workplace. And so if you can live anywhere, right, you don't have to live close to your job, you know, you make different decisions. So you see folks who are moving from Northeast and California and different, you know, more, say, high tax sort of environments, and they're coming here to Florida, right, to have a better tax environment where their money goes further. So you're seeing that certainly play out, and you're seeing people buy new homes as a result, because if you're going to work from home, if you're going to be in your home for a significant amount of time, more so than you were previously, you want a home office, a gym, a pool, all of these different things. And so you're seeing people who are looking to build the house that they want, you know, with the anticipation that they're going to be spending more time in it. You're seeing a migration from folks who were living in the city to the suburbs. They want more space. The benefits of the city aren't as great as they once were pre-COVID, right? You're in a denser environment. So, you know, it stands to reason there's a greater chance that you're being exposed to COVID. That's driving people into the suburbs, into buying new homes. So you have all of these different trends. And of course, low mortgage rates does not hurt either. Historically low mortgage rates, in fact. And so all of these different factors are really kind of pushing people into buying new homes. So it is, I think, something that has created a strong market now. And I think looking going forward, that's going to continue because the trends are in that favor.
Well, so I think that's a perfect point to go into, you know, so tell me more about those trends going forward. You know, what are we looking at as we talk about, you know, development over the next year or so?
So, yeah, I think the trends certainly on the residential side are extremely strong. I mean, the millennials are going to continue to buy houses. You're just seeing kind of that first wave of the millennials starting to buy houses. That's going to continue on. I think the migration out of the city into the suburbs is real, and that equates to more homes being built, more home ownership opportunities for the market. I think the remote working side is real. I think that's going to continue on. And I think that's going to create more opportunities in the real estate sector as well. I would tell you that the commercial side of the sector, which I don't represent the commercial real estate side, but I certainly interact with that side. I think that's the more challenging side of the market.
Of course, as
you can imagine, on the retail side, in particular, the brick and mortar retail side, the office space side, those are probably two difficult sectors moving forward, depending on how this pandemic plays out and certain dynamics that play out. I will say, though, on the commercial side, the industrial commercial side is going very strong. But again, I think that retail space, that office space is one that is more concerning, and especially as the home ownership side actually benefits because of the remote from the work from home model that you're seeing going forward.
Yeah, we talked to somebody, I don't remember who it was, a while ago, and they were talking about, yeah, so basically, you know, a lot of businesses now look at it as they have like 10 smaller locations because you got everybody working from, you know, a home office as opposed to having that one central location. And so you balance the needing more space personally, needing less space professionally. So it's very interesting. You know, the only thing that I worry about from the lawyer perspective is obviously we've got the eviction freeze for quite a while. And at some point that will no longer be the case. Have you all talked about what impact that's going to have on, you know, you'll have so many more houses freed up or open or available, you know, how's that going to change anything?
Yeah. So I've kind of touched a little bit more on the home ownership side and haven't talked yet about the kind of the multifamily rental side, which I think is challenging as well. And one of those components, as you mentioned, is the eviction side of the rental market. And currently under the CDC, there is a national eviction moratorium that is supposed to run through the end of the year. It's unprecedented is the word that's thrown out a lot lately, but this CDC moratorium is certainly unprecedented for a number of reasons. But even before the CDC moratorium, eviction moratorium, you had Florida had a moratorium on evictions as well that the governor recently let expire because the CDC moratorium was in place. So you have for the last, you know, 6 months and if not more, you as a landlord have not had the ability here in Florida to go through the eviction process if you have a tenant who is not paying rent. And that's really the only remedy a landlord has in a situation where somebody's not paying rent. So they're not getting paid rent for the housing that they're providing. And it's not just, you know, I think there's a misconception that all of the landlords are huge, you know, companies and operations. A lot of it's, you know, small business owners, people who have one or two rental properties who rely on that money to pay their mortgage, to pay their taxes on the property. And so, you know, not being able to do something that will allow you to collect rent that is owed, it's hard. It's real hard, and it's been hard on the landlords. But I think the biggest fear is that what happens when this moratorium ends, right? What happens on January 1 and these bills come due? Because under the moratorium, the even though the person can't be evicted, the rent is still due and it's still owed. So you come January 1 and somebody hasn't paid rent for 5 months, right? 3, 4, 5 months. I mean, those bills are going to be huge. And I think some of the concern is how many of these people are going to be able to pay rent? How long is it going to take to actually go through the eviction process? There is a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty on that side. And I think there's some fear that we could be in a difficult situation from that side of the market as a result.
Well, it's interesting because I see so many potential issues with this. I mean, one, we don't know that we're definitively going to go back to this on January 1. And while it's not a big thing for us, you know, I talked to a number of attorneys in the Midwest who they normally have an eviction freeze during cold months. And so you might have a situation where, you know, even if it goes away nationwide, Florida won't be one of them, but you might have a number of states that might be looking at holding those off until April or something like that with due to weather concerns. But then, you know, it's interesting. Orange County put in place the eviction forgiveness, I forgot what they called it.
Diversion.
Yeah, the diversion plan. But it's amazing to me, like, how many counties don't have that. And then you're stuck with somebody who's owed, you know, are they going to go not pay the mortgage payment that they can't make because they're not getting the rent on the property? And then what are you going to do? And then you kick the person out, you got to find somebody else in, but they're behind. So it's a very interesting, and I hate using that word, because we don't know that January 1 will be the end of it. And then we're going to have millions of potential evictions start up that day, which is going to backlog everything so much for those right. to actually get into place as well.
Right. No, 100% right. And I think if you recall, maybe 2008, 2009, 2010, when you had the housing crisis with foreclosures, I mean, it would take years in cases to get through the foreclosure process. And if you're looking, I don't know it'll be the same, but certainly if you have, as you said, millions of evictions, potentially, how's that going to affect the court system? How long is this really going to take? And I think you're going to see a lot of different effects. And it's distorting. I mean, this eviction moratorium, I think, is going to have a lot of distortions in the market. And again, to your point, yeah, it the owners of these properties, they're going to have their bills coming due. And are they going to be foreclosed on because they can't pay their commercial mortgage on their property?
So from that standpoint, though, I mean, I read something and it was nationwide. So I don't know how it reflects Florida and how correct it is. But it was a couple months ago, they were talking about upwards of 40 million homes had missed at least one mortgage payment. It didn't talk about if those were forgiven. It didn't talk about rental payments. It didn't talk about anything like that. Do you have anything numbers wise for our area?
I haven't seen the specific. I mean, I'll tell you this. So the press, when you read a lot of the stories about whether it be evictions or foreclosures, and some of the, I would call them doomsday sort of predictions that you're going to have, you know, half the people who are renting an apartment are going to be evicted or things of that nature. I mean, I think the numbers are going to be big. I just don't. If you are either a landlord, you're not going to allow half of your customers to leave, you know, and be in a situation where there will be ways to work this out. I mean, they're already, you know, landlords and banks, if you're on the mortgage side, are doing things to work with their customers because it makes financial sense. There's payment plans. all of that is already occurring, and that will continue to occur. So I think it'll mitigate some of the worst case scenarios because there's a mutual interest in there in working it out. But I do think that you will see some significant numbers, just maybe not to the extent that some of the doomsday predictions out there would have you believe.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing that I never, because obviously I wasn't doing business law and I wasn't dealing with bankers and financial people in 08 and 09. So it's interesting to hear that like banks didn't want to take people's houses just as much as people didn't want to kick out of their house because the banks had like no mechanism in place to turn around and sell these and figure out what to do with them. And, you know, for the hundreds of homes, I just like you talked about, you know, that's the one thing a landlord can do. That's one, you know, the one thing the bank can do if you're not making the mortgage payment. So it's just, it's interesting to see the opportunities that people have to meet somewhere in the middle, but that's not going to be 100% fix.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. There will be some way to work it out. And to your point, yeah, the banks, it's not in their financial interest to have all of these, you know, foreclosures. I mean, they're going to do what they can. And you'll have other investors, private equity, if you remember 2008, 2009, Invitation Homes, right? Companies like that will come in and try and invest in some of these distressed assets as well.
So what, I mean, I guess let me phrase it this way. Like, so what can we be doing as business owners during this time frame? I mean, is there something that puts us in a better position? Is there something where we just need to be aware of that we're not at the bottom? I mean, like what's the information you want to get to as many people as possible as we continue through hopefully the short end of COVID?
So one, I think we all agree, hopefully COVID is in our rear view mirror here sooner rather than later. I do think one thing that at least in Central Florida, just looking at, you know, again, the housing market and it's not all doom and gloom in terms of our economy. The housing market, like I said, is extremely strong, stronger than we thought it would be. So you do have some economic activity. And I know our tourism and hospitality folks are struggling, but hopefully that will be rectified soon. But I think there's one that business owners should understand that I think the economy going forward is going to be stronger than people think. I think there's investment opportunities out there in our economy and certainly in our real estate market. And I would say if you're looking to sell your home, this is an excellent time to do so. The inventory, the supply that is out there is so tight, particularly on the existing home sales side. You can just see that not only are they getting scooped up extremely quickly if you put your home on the market, but the amount that you're able to get for your house is at a premium here in Central Florida. So I think business owners should take heart that I think our economy, particularly with all these people moving here, I mean, you know, you have a lot of customers coming your way if you're a business owner.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know, you talked about that work from home. And I mean, we've heard a lot of companies that were, you know, based in New York or LA or something along those lines. And I think Amazon being one of the big ones, they've started to start moving people around into cheaper areas. One of those being our area from the tax standpoint. So, you know, you might have these big companies given a 20% pay cut, but paying for somebody to move down to Florida, which on a job that would be a very good paying job for here, because we don't have the income tax. We don't have, you know, property taxes as high as the Northeast. We don't have cost of living as high, all those things, but that's going to get people going to restaurants and buying stuff locally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The effects of a strong real estate housing market are, you know, it runs throughout our economy. So, you know, some of the restaurant, you know, owners who have been struggling as a result of COVID for obvious reasons, limited capacity, et cetera. I think, again, you're going to have more customers. They are coming. So take heart in that regard. You're getting a lot of people moving here with a lot of disposable income. To your point, a lot of these are from California, New Jersey, New York, who can work remotely, who are now coming to live here. And they're doing very well as a result because where they were living was very expensive. And here in relation is a lot less expensive. So hopefully they'll drive that additional savings into our economy.
Yeah, I mean, they'll look, as much as you can work anywhere else, you're still going to have to buy food from, you know, Publix or local grocery store or our local restaurants, and, you know, plus the everything else that comes with being here locally. She says, it's very interesting. So obviously the, you know, the real estate professionals, the people working in real estate have a lot to look forward to, hopefully from a positive standpoint as this continues on. But are there any other industries you've seen that don't jump out immediately as being so related to real estate, but are industries that should be keeping an extra eye on what's going on here with the housing market?
Well, I mean, I think you touched on one of them is certainly our restaurant industry, which I think, again, has been hurt by COVID for obvious reasons. But I think, again, looking at the numbers of people who are moving here, it's a very positive sign for those folks. I would also look at, you know, our tourism and hospitality industry, I think, is hurting because of, obviously, the tourists from outside of Florida aren't traveling here in the same numbers currently as a result of COVID. But there's a big push, as you might be aware, from, I think, Visit Florida or, you know, one of the organizations to get, you know, people to have domestic tourism, you know, where people in state are visiting the theme parks and you know, tourist attractions. And so I think the more people that are moving here, hopefully that will kind of spur that domestic tourism to at least hold the industry over until we get the out-of-towners and those who are international as well to come back. So I think that's an industry, the housing market in that regard, those folks should be taking a look at as well.
Yeah, I know that's what we've done. We're like, all right, where can we travel to be a little bit different that we can go in a car, not get on a plane? And we're like, all right, let's go. We'll go to Daytona Beach and rent an Airbnb. We'll go to Gulfport and, you know, and stay on the beach over there. So obviously the flip side of those people, I guess a lot of them are probably coming to Orlando to get the theme parks while they're at, you know, 20% or 30% capacity, whatever they're limiting themselves to these days.
Yeah, I live right around the corner from the Disney parks. My wife works for Disney, and I can tell you, they're starting to get more and more crowded. I think, which is great sign. But yeah, it's there are a lot of locals definitely trying to take advantage of that, and that's fantastic. I think we're all trying to support our local economy in that regard.
Yeah, because the last time I was over there, we had an attorney came down from Chicago. Met up with them for dinner at Swan or Dolphin. The other one was closed. They closed down one of the hotels and just kept everybody in one of them because they had so few people. But obviously, if it's locals, you know, you may not be staying at the on-property hotels as much.
Right, and that's the downside, I think, is the hotel side, that the locals obviously can travel and stay with friends or obviously in their own homes. So that side is suffering as a result. But, you know, the theme parks, Disney, Universal, all great attractions are certainly attracting people to come and live here. I think Disney is a huge driver of our housing market as well. So these people are here, they're looking to go to our attractions and they're looking to spend money.
Yeah, I read something and I don't know when it was, what time it was, but like 10,000 people a day are moving here. Does that sound right?
So and the numbers could have changed, but it's Central Florida, it was about 1,500 people a week were moving to Central Florida. And that was pre-COVID. And I haven't seen the latest numbers, but I would assume that those numbers are still pretty in line. So you got 1,500 people moving a week to Central Florida. That's a lot of growth, a lot of economic growth as well.
So maybe the numbers I was looking at, maybe that was Florida per month.
Might be state. It could be statewide numbers.
Okay. All right. So we've got about another 5 or so minutes. You know, any other information that you want to make sure that we pass along to our business owner listeners and anybody else who's catching this podcast?
You know, I think that the economy here in Central Florida is going to rebound faster than people think. Again, I think there are certainly sectors that are struggling, and we've talked about a few of them, some of the obvious ones. But I think if you look at the dynamics and the trends, and some of them we spoke about earlier, if you look at that, those are long-term trends. And I think if you can look at it long-term, I think you should be very bullish on Central Florida, very bullish on the Orlando area. And if you're looking to invest, if it's in the real estate sector or otherwise, I think that this is an excellent area for you to do so, and you, that you will benefit long term, even if there is some short term uncertainty. The long term outlook, I think, is extremely bullish for our area.
All right. So then let me pivot slightly, but not too much. So, I mean, yes. I, from my perspective, you know, you yourself are a success story, and whether you agree with me or not, I mean, that's the viewpoint that I would take. What's the one thing that you would attribute a lot of your success to? I mean, what's that one tip that for business owners looking to grow their personal brand, their business themselves through all this, that they can learn from you?
You know, one thing, and I appreciate the kind words. The one thing that I always, so I'm a very curious person. I'm kind of a voracious reader. I always have been. I read every night. I try to read everything I possibly can. I just try to get as much knowledge as possible. And for me, just and reading widely. So I guess the best advice I can give anyone is just to, you know, read. Like do your homework to somebody, but don't think of it as homework. More, you know, enjoy learning and always continuing to try and learn more and more, because I think that that's what it brings you to so many different opportunities, so many different perspectives, and I mean, that's the best advice I can probably give anybody.
Yeah, I always tell people, like, I hated school, and I did well enough at it. I just hated it because I didn't like being forced to do what somebody else said. And so now I'm like,
I'm 100% with you.
Yeah.
I'm 100% with you. When I want to read and learn, I love it. I just want to pick what I want to, you know. Yeah, I'm 100% with you.
I'll go down like a 2-hour flipping through Wikipedia on like 70s bands or comic book movies that they just turned into a TV show or God knows what it is. And next thing I know, it'll be, you know, 2 hours gone. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and thank you so much for the insight. For people to stay in touch with you or stay in touch with your organizations, what's the best way for them to do that?
So I can give you my my email if anybody's curious to reach out to me. I'm pretty open in that regard. So it's Lee, L-E-E, at greaterorlandoba.com. So if anyone has any questions or wants to reach out, like I said, I'm happy to happy to talk to anybody, pretty open in that regard.
All right. Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Jordan.
You've been listening to Let's Get Up to Business from Jordan Law. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast and would consider sharing the show. We would also love an honest 5-star review through iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever podcatcher you use. If you are interested in being a guest of the podcast, please contact producer Mark through email at mark@jordanlawfl.com. Use the subject line "podcast guest" in your email. Thank you. We look forward to speaking to you again soon.